The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
It's telly time. We have Joe Shea down in Cork and we have Jennifer Gannon here in the studio with us in Dublin. Jennifer, I'm old enough to remember the time when you didn't know what was going to be on the Late Late Show. They wouldn't tell you in advance who the guests were going to be to sort of keep you watching it. And then, it's been for many years now, you get the list in advance and lots of times you go, oh, gee, I wouldn't want to be watching that. But I have to say that on any editorial basis, they've put together some hell of a lineup tonight.
Yeah, tonight is really interesting. I think you've got Ant and Dec, and I think Ant and Dec are really, it's a coup in a way because they don't do a lot of media. They don't do a lot of press outside, you know, of just promoting their shows on ITV. And that'll be fascinating because I'm a Celebrity is a weird one this year, I think, and a lot of people want to know what the hell is going on.
It's in a castle in Wales,
yeah,
isn't it?
It doesn't sound as glam as or as exciting as being in the jungle. So I'm wondering how they're going to pitch it, how they're going to sell it. Will, you know, Ryan ask Ant any pertinent questions about, you know, what's been going on with him?
Drink, personally, drugs and
yeah,
driving.
And also just the Simon Cowell factor of things, like how is he? He's broken his back, as we know. He's, you know, out of the limits at this stage on TV. So, and just about like their evolution of their career, I just think they're actually quite interesting as it goes. But then you've also got, you know, Mary Trump, like we've got Trump's niece on, which is, that book is explosive. And I think everybody is going to want the anecdotes. And I think this is going to be real Late Late fair headlines material the next day. Everybody will be talking about it. So I'm really interested to see how that goes.
And Joe, also Jane Fonda, who's Hollywood legend, and GAA legend Bernard Brogan, who has brought out things. So that's actually, in fairness, you have to say, is a hell of a lineup.
Yeah, it's you can see that they're really putting an effort into the guests. Even just in the first, like last week, they got off to a flying start. So this week, they're putting a lot of effort into getting a great mix, a classic mix of Late Late Show guests, all kinds of everything. You know, people, the kind of hackneyed criticism of the Late Late in recent years has been, well, you know, they don't have the classic raconteurs, the guests of yesteryear. You know, Peter Ustinov, you know, of course, Peter Ustinov is long dead, you know, and those people aren't really around anymore. You know, people are either on trying to sell something or they're in the news for, you know, reasons that may not have to do with talent, so to speak. But, you know, they've got Bernard Brogan is going to be in there, Magella Moynihan, the Garda whistleblower. You know, it's a really good, strong mix. Like I said, all kinds of everything. So if they can keep this up through the run of the show, and it is difficult to do it for a whole season because the quality of guests are not going to be there every week, you know, it'll be a good season for the Late Late.
Okay, Virgin Media on Sunday night are bringing out a new show, Big Year in Big School. The Secret Life of 4-Year-Olds, which I think probably be of interest to you, Joe. You've a young one around that age,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, this looks really interesting. And, you know, I do have a 4-year-old and she went back into preschool last week. And it was a very strange and difficult time. And as parents all over Ireland know, it's, you know, especially for somebody that young, for kids that young, we've told her that she can't understand the coronavirus. We've told her it's the tummy bug. And she knows that there's a bad tummy bug. And I think a lot of parents have had to kind of find workarounds in that way to kind of explain it to their children. So this show, which is looking at an Aston Village Educate Together in Drogheda, it's for 4-year-olds, it's following them as they go in. So it's very incredibly timely. And it's going to look at the challenges for the teachers, for the teachers.
Yeah, I think
assistants.
It actually, what happened was, I think they were filming and they got to March, didn't they? And then, like,
yes,
there was this, suddenly the school has to stop.
Yep.
So they have all that. But it does
really replace.
It's very interesting. I mean, even for 4-year-olds, trying to encourage them not to do the things that kids do, like hugging each other and running over to play with each other. And how dangerous it must be, the idea of trying to tell children, and hopefully this isn't happening, to sort of stay away from other children and stay away from their grandparents. It's not good for them long term, presumably.
No. It isn't good for them. And I know from my own experience, and again, parents around Ireland will know this, it was such a difficult time because, you know, you'd be out, especially at the start of the lockdown, you'd be out with your kids and they'd see other children, you know, and they'd want to go over, of course, and play and talk and interact. And you keep saying to them, you can't, you have to stay here, you know, and they didn't see their friends for a long time. So again, this programme, and you're right, they were in place and were kind of lucky enough to have the access already, to have the relationship, to be able to make what should be a very revealing, a very interesting show. It's going to speak to a lot of parents around Ireland.
Okay, now let's go to other things and let's talk about the end of an institution. I know Dermot and Dave covered this earlier in the week. They even tried to ask me, would I come on and talk about it? I only say I don't watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians. It just happens to be on, probably on our television at home, more often than football is on. Well, I get the football on, the Kardashians goes off. What is the attraction of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, which is now coming to an end?
Everything. I love Kardashians. I'm devastated. I think they did make the right decision, though, to end the show. I mean, the Kardashians, they're the first family of postmodern pop culture, and they're really our reality TV royalty. Like, they have tentacles. Their tentacles just extend throughout television, business, fashion, art, sport, music, from Robert Kardashian Sr., his involvement in the O.J. Simpson trial, to the evolution of Kim and Kanye. I think they're the last great pair couple, to the introduction of Caitlyn Jenner to the world on the front cover of Vanity Fair, to Kylie Jenner becoming a billionaire for her makeup industry. And they've become this indelible part of our cultural lives, whether you watch the show or not. They are there. Their imprints are everywhere. But I do think, with Kanye's recent mental health issue, and we've seen in the last couple of seasons, Kourtney, her unwillingness to film the show. She doesn't want to be in the show anymore. And I think with their own children, they're getting older, you could see why they want to call a halt to it. And I think the show has become a lot darker in recent seasons. There's instead of being the escapist kind of thrill entertainment show, it's become this kind of meditation on the corrosiveness of fame and what actually happens when you get everything that you want. Now, it's been brilliant to watch that over the years for me as like a pop culture writer, but I just think it has put a cap on a certain era of pop culture. I think we're moving away now from everyone divulging everything about their lives, and we're kind of going into a throwback days of, you know, controlled celebrity privacy. We've seen that with Kylie Jenner herself. She kept her pregnancy under wraps for so long, and I think that's the new way forward for them, that they're going to keep a lid on things, and their brand is well established now, so they don't have to do anything anymore.
Joe, I didn't hear you trying to butt in there making any particular observations. Think of something while we play a clip. The first clip from Keeping Up with the Kardashians from season 11, when Kris Jenner met Caitlyn for the first time since her transition.
My goodness. Sure. Look at you. Nice shoes.
Do you like those?
Yeah. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Oh. How are you?
I'm good. I brought you some cookies.
Thank you.
Just that first look at Caitlyn is so surreal, and I feel like it'll take me a second to get my bearings, but I've got to hand it to her. She looks great.
So, enough of the small talk. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm really good. Just working.
Well, I haven't heard from you in forever.
I just felt thrown under the bridge. I felt like you were so excited to be going through this exciting time in your life, but I feel like I didn't want to communicate with you and be angry.
Nice shoes, Joel. That's the first thing you'd say in a situation like that, isn't it?
Well, you have to think of something, I suppose, you know. But those kind of moments were genuinely, I mean, interesting and powerful in their own way as well, because a lot of what they were doing was navigating the changes that were going on in culture, in society, in the US and across the world. I mean, what struck me as interesting was that when this was announced, every second person on Irish Twitter was saying, I've never watched it, as if that was the badge of being a Renaissance man. I've never watched the Kardashians, you know. They've had a huge impact. And even here in Ireland, I mean, think about that accent and that way of talking. And, you know, that's come into Dublin, definitely, with young people in Dublin. You hear it everywhere you go, you know. So they have had that influence.
That from Cork.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're keeping it pure down here, but you know, it's definitely affected Dublin, Matt. But it's interesting. They have had such a huge, huge impact across the board. They are, you know, incredibly skilled business people. They have become, some of them, you know, almost billionaires. You have to stand back and admire, you know, and giving us words. They've created words in the English language, like Kris Jenner is the manager and the mom, so she's a momager, you know. And you hear that these things have, so much of the Kardashian culture has, with a K, has kind of seeped into our daily lives, and we don't realise it most of the time. I'd actually be sad to see them go, because like I said, they're an incredible barometer of what is going on in the US.
Well, actually, let's hear that bit from season 6 of the show where Kim loses her earring after Chris Humphries throws her into the sea while they're on holiday in Bora Bora.
They were expensive.
Chris, he throws me in the water. I land on the side of my head and I feel my earring is gone.
Wait.
My earring's gone!
Are you s***?
Oh my God, I'm gonna cry. My diamond earring.
Hold on. We'll find it, baby.
We're not gonna find it in the ocean. Why am I diving here?
I'm pretty upset.
Oh, what happened? My diamond earring fell out. I have my diamond earrings. My diamond earring came out.
Show me where. Just show
in
me
the
where.
Ocean.
But the ocean, that is not that deep. Show me where. Now just breathe. Everything's gonna be fine.
What's wrong with you guys? My diamond earring came off in the ocean. My diamond earring.
Find it. My earring's in the ocean. Just find it for me.
But Courtney buttons that by saying, Kim, people are dying. It's so good. The comedy in it is unbelievable. I will miss it. Stuff like that. And Scott Disick, who transformed from being like Patrick Bateman into the voice of reason over like 10, 15 years. It's been amazing to watch.
Scott's been on a journey, all right. Yes, so he's one of the most interesting characters. In
I love the way that they get at times so serious, though, about the most ordinary things. It is just hilarious to watch at times.
It is.
And the deadpan delivery is the most important thing that could ever have happened to anybody dealing with this programme. Anyway, let's move on to Picks of the Week. What's your one, Joe?
Actually, I think this, again, is a very timely show. It's a Year in Home, A Year in Ireland's Housing Crisis. It's on RT1, 9:35 on Monday. And it's basically a documentary that was filmed over a course of the past year, looking at the statistics behind what's going on in the housing market, following a cross-section of people, you know, as usual, from all walks of Irish life, as they attempt to navigate away through the ups and downs of life in Ireland. Rents, house prices, vulture funds. Now, it's interesting to me because we're in the middle of something and we don't know how that's going to affect, you know, this ongoing, never-ending housing crisis in Ireland. So maybe we'll get some pointers out of this, or at least know where we are at the moment ahead of what could be huge changes in that market.
What's your pick of the week, please, Jennifer?
Mine's The Third Day. It's on Sky Atlantic next Tuesday at 9 o'clock. And I'm really excited about the prospect of this. It's Dennis Kelly, who wrote the cult conspiracy thriller Utopia. And that's been remade by Amazon Prime at the moment. And it's this dystopian kind of... It's very striking looking. It has this theatrical element to it. It's worked in conjunction with this renowned theatre company, Punch Drunk. So they're involved in the production. And it's about people that have landed on a strange island at different times, and the cast is amazing. It's got
a bit like Lost.
No, it sounds like Lost, but the thing about it is it's more Wicker Man than Lost, so think of like that kind of British.
But hang on,
horror.
It's got a hell of a cast,
it's got a great
it?
Cast. Naomi Harris, Emily Watson, Paddy Considine, and Jude Law. And I think Jude Law is making such interesting choices at the moment, and I think he's going to have this renaissance like Matthew McConaughey did a while ago. And I think it's a little bit like Broadchurch as well, and it's a little bit like The Wicker Man, so very paranoid, very strange. I'm really looking forward to watching it.
In the time we've left to us, I want to hear both your opinions on this cancel Netflix campaign.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is the problem because outrage is a market in itself.
Just explain the programme which has caused the problem.
It's a film, a French film called Cuties. In English, it's called Cuties. And basically, there was a wave of criticism because Netflix, the way they had promoted the film, the marketing material, it's about a young girl dance troupe. And a lot of people were complaining that the images were hyper-sexualized. And the problem was Netflix came out and said, yes, OK, hands up, they may be looked inappropriate, but it actually caught fire in the States, and it caught the attention of these QAnon conspiracy theorists who believe everyone in Hollywood is part of a covert child sex ring. So they've got about 600,000 signatures to say that they want people to cancel their Netflix. And I think the initial imagery was problematic, but the actual film is about the hypersexualization of women in the media and how that affects young girls at impressionable ages. And I think the nuance obviously has been lost in this media storm. And the film is supposed to be uncomfortable people to watch, because French cinema is renowned for being, you know, breaking down boundaries, and, you know, it's part of that. But I just think that this is going to have a detrimental effect on this film and a female filmmaker's career, because of a marketing choice, a really bad marketing choice by Netflix, and the rush that people have their opinions formed now before they've actually seen something. Because I've seen on Twitter now that people complaining about this film, they don't even realise it is a film.
Okay, what's your view on this, Joe?
It's just an example. The culture warriors and the QAnon crazies in the US got a hold of this. They hadn't seen it. And they started accusing the young French Senegalese director, Maimouna Diakoré. And what they were accusing her of promoting was what the film was actually challenging. So Netflix, Ted Sandros of Netflix, did a very unusual thing for Netflix. He apologised for their very poor choice of a poster, basically, to promote this. And he apologised personally to the director. The director said she discovered the poster at the same time as the American public. She had no idea that this critically acclaimed movie, which actually was about the sexualisation of young girls and the challenges they face, she had no idea. She was walking blindly into this huge controversy. Cancel culture is a phrase that I hope I never hear again in my lifetime, because it has come to have no meaning whatsoever and is used inappropriately and out of context all the time. And this director, this seems to be a very talented young director, has become a victim of basically the ongoing culture wars in the US.
Joe Shea, Jennifer Gannon, thank you very much for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.